U.S. House Republicans finally choose a speaker. Brad Chambers pitches an online child safety plan, plus a pension benefit recommendation, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 27th, 2023.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Republicans in the U.S. House ended a chaotic three-week vacancy in the speakership, electing Louisiana's Mike Johnson to lead the chamber.
Therefore, the Honorable Mike Johnson of the state of Louisiana, having received a majority of the votes cast, is duly elected Speaker of the House of Representatives for the 118th Congress.
Johnson was the fourth Republican chosen by the GOP caucus to attempt to secure enough votes to become Speaker in the last few weeks, after Steve Scalise, Jim Jordan, and Tom Emmer all failed to do so. Every Republican member voted for Johnson, who has a relatively low profile in national politics. A lawyer who has served in the House since 2017, Johnson had been vice chair of the House Republican Conference and was previously chair of the Republican Study Committee, an influential group of fiscal conservatives in the chamber. Johnson is a staunch opponent of gay rights and helped lead an effort to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election.
With a speaker now chosen, will the chaos of the last few weeks have any long-lasting impact? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Chris Mitchum. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, or rather Chris Mitchum, will this matter to voters a year from now?
I think you still have another month to figure that out, because unfortunately with this whole debacle, any kind of government holdup, any kind of future government shutdown, unfortunately it's going to be blamed on Republicans now. I mean, there's no way to really finesse that Democrats are the cause of this with the happenings of the last couple of weeks. But I honestly think this is maybe one of the best elections that Republicans could have had, simply because this guy seems normal. And I mean, I'm thinking if you guys,
what?
Comparatively to the others, like the Jim Jordans and the Scalise and things like that, because honestly, if you would have picked a Jim Jordan, he probably would have had a more negative impact on a lot of the moderate Republicans in the swing districts, just because of his persona, his history, and things like that. So the fact that most people had to Google who this person was, now granted, you may or may not like what you find, but the thing is, he doesn't have the reputation of a Jim Jordan coming in and being, you know, ultra-right, MAGA, all that kind of stuff. So I think if he ends up doing a really good job, obviously he had unanimous support from his caucus, which is something that would have been hard to believe, I think, even 2 or 3 days ago. If he can maintain the quorum and actually start getting Congress back on track, I think a year from now, as long as things aren't, you know, horrendously held up in Congress, I don't think it will have that big of an impact.
I agree that he's relatively unknown. I mean, we had U.S. senators who were asked about him this week say, you know, I'm going to have to Google him,
right,
as you just put it. But as we're starting to learn more about who Mike Johnson is, I think fairly far right.
Very far right.
But that was the only sort of person who was going to be chosen by this caucus, because that's where this caucus is.
Well, no, that's because Trump picked him, okay? Trump vetoed Emmer, okay? And virtually anybody else that came forward.
You think Trump would have preferred Jordan, though, right?
Well, he did for a little while, but he couldn't sell Jordan.
Yeah, so that was
but
his first choice.
This guy is ideologically the same as Jordan. His personality may be different, but ideologically he's right there. If he could have a national ban on abortions, if he could have women denied the vote, he'd be right in there. You know, he would. And so it depends on what happens now. I mean, if he pursues the MAGNA agenda, or if he does what's good for the country. But the problem from their perspective is, if they do what's good for the country and deal with the Ukraine and Israel and deal with the budget and deal with the immigration, then Joe Biden looks good. And they don't want that. And that is more important to them than what's good for the country.
Politically speaking, I agree that I don't think there is, it doesn't seem to be much difference between Mike Johnson and Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise, and arguably even to a certain extent Kevin McCarthy. Definitely different than Tom Emmer, who was one of the more moderate members of that caucus. But personality-wise, he is very different from a lot of those people, partly because he's unknown and partly because that just seems to be who he is. Does that make a difference in the fact that he is the leader of that caucus now?
Yeah, I think the only thing that's going to matter is what we see in a couple weeks on the shutdown. Right. I don't think this speaker stuff is over, because if he gives even a little to keep the government going, his caucus is going to do the same thing and, you know, try to get him out again. And they just, the word compromise
is not in their vocabulary.
Yeah, they don't like that. And I honestly don't know what his personality is, except for, you know, what I've seen so far is he has press conferences where he refuses to take questions or answer questions, and he doesn't want to talk about any of his stances in the past against gay marriage, calling the election rigged and stolen in 2020. I think people are going to learn, but I'm not sure this one, that Republicans can move on from this as fast as they want to.
Yeah. Is this really over?
No. In Washington these days, nothing is over. Absolutely not. This is one skirmish in a long-running war, and I don't see the end in sight, frankly, with the current makeup of the U.S. House and Senate, for that matter. I think he has made an attempt. Those questions he has answered, which isn't
few and far between, but
he has tried to moderate a bit. You know, they ask, should the inquiry into the Biden impeachment still proceed? And he said, you know, it wasn't as, and I know this is all very relative. You know, it's not like he was building a scaffold and said, look over my shoulder, it's ready to go. To hang him, you know. Yeah. But he did say, we're the party of law, let the facts, you know, proceed. He's saying the right, when he's saying something, he's trying to say, it seems, the right things. But that, you can't do that forever. And there will be some moment where his deeply held beliefs, which seem to be, by all accounts, very much to the right, far to the right of Kevin McCarthy, will come to the fore. What I think is going to be interesting, well, it's all interesting, I guess, in a kind of macabre kind of way, like Halloween, yeah, appropriate. He's the most conservative speaker ever, and he's also the least experienced speaker ever. He was elected in 2016, and typically we have speakers who have been around. They know how to negotiate. They know how to work off some of the rough edges and maybe give a little bit, take a little bit. And you can't run a deliberative body when it's as evenly divided as it is without some willingness to compromise. So there's going to be another explosion.
Yeah, and to John's point, I think even from a Republican standpoint, that's what you should be worried more about is the experience, especially when it comes to just even the simple procedural things in the House, also fundraising. I believe Kevin McCarthy was one of the biggest, if not the biggest fundraiser in Republican history. So that's something you also got to look at. But when it comes to that far right angle, the Matt Gaetz angle, I think they will give him more leeway simply because Matt Gaetz can look in a camera and say, I won. Here, I got a more conservative guy in there. So even if he does tend to negotiate probably less than a Kevin McCarthy would, but I think he will have a lot more leeway with that.
We'll see what happens when the budget comes up. Yeah. We'll see.
The rubber meeting the road. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, will the chaos around choosing a U.S. House Speaker hurt Republicans in the 2024 elections? A yes or B no. Last week, we asked you whether you support the UAW strike against Ford, GM, and Stellantis. 69% of you say yes, 31% say no, and we heard that UAW and Ford this week reached a tentative agreement. That's certainly progress that we'd like to see. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Republican gubernatorial candidate Brad Chambers wants to create measures aimed at helping protect children online, unveiling a proposal this week.
Chambers says his campaign will focus heavily on policy issues, and he's starting with online child safety because it puts an exclamation point on the fact that children are critical to Indiana's present and future.
Addressing the challenges that parents have in today's, you know, technology environment is super important to just make a priority.
His proposal would require stricter age verification on social media, gaming platforms, and adult sites. It would limit data collection of users under age 18, and it would require education in schools about the benefits and dangers of social media.
We got to be careful not to overburden not only our educators, but our kids with these issues. But this is fundamental, I think, and foundational.
Age verification measures in other states have repeatedly run into constitutional problems, but Chambers says it's worth trying regardless.
And Delaney, let's start here. Is this a good plan?
Well, I have to make a disclosure here, okay? I am not the most technologically advanced person on this panel. And I have questions about how Indiana can control the internet. Having said that, I think the idea of discussing in the classroom the dangers of social media is a good idea. You know, you get these kids that get this terrible ideas and they post them, and then it affects them when they apply for college or when they apply for a job. They need to understand what the risks are. As far as the rest of it goes, if he can come up with a legislative way to do something about this and protects kids, you know, I mean, how can you not be in favor of that? I just don't understand how Indiana can affect the rest of the world.
And I did ask him that, and he said, you know, Indiana, to a certain extent, needs to not worry about what the companies will do. We have to stay, you know, put our flag in the ground, say this is what we are going to demand of you, and then they will have to comply or not. We've seen this tried in other places, and so far it hasn't worked all that well. Does that matter in an election process?
Yeah, and no, because honestly, in the election process, this is an awesome move, I think, by the Chambers campaign, because you are putting out a proposal that you would think a large majority of people would agree with, and you now come out as the first one as the thought leader, even coming out with a plan that, again, lacks a lot of the details of how you're actually going to implement this.
A lot of the details. Very not about all of the details.
Minutia details. But I think you've seen this around the country. I think Louisiana started it, and it's been adopted in 5 or 6 states where a lot of major pornographic websites have just left.
Yeah.
Like, they, once you get that age verification of actually having to submit a government ID, which is quite the step. I mean, unfortunately, with the internet, there's probably a lot of other options out there. But you've seen it kind of work in certain ones. I know it's kind of in courts right now about the legality of it and things like that. But you've seen a lot of major pornographic websites kind of leave other states just because of this.
And to be fair, Chambers acknowledged that, yeah, this particularly the age verification part of it has run into legal challenges in other states, and so far hasn't really been successful in too many places. But he said it's worth trying regardless because kids are being harmed. To that end, what do you make of this being his first policy proposal?
I think it's a logical one. Let's look at the goal line. You know, in the first edition of Ann's Politics for Dummies book, I don't know how many editions you have, you might have said that politicians or elected officials were rewarded on the success, ultimate success of their proposals or plans. I think that's thrown away, maybe edition 2 or 3. It's now the attempt is what seems to curry favor with your supporters, your core supporters. We've seen Todd Rokita time and time again. It's not the outcome, it's the fight, you know, that gets people going. So this is one that seems to be, everybody wants to protect kids, you know. There's not a big pedophilia lobby. I think it's a small group, not deep pockets. So it's a safe issue that way. And do I think it's a practical issue? Probably not. And the courts are going to weigh in on this, not on this particular fine point, but the whole notion of moderated content. The Supreme Court, you know, we have the issue, should a politician, say Donald Trump, for example, be forced off of a privately held platform, or does he somehow have some right that is superior, or anyone else in similar position?
Or even down to the level of courts weighing in eventually on, you know, can a politician block one of their constituents on social media?
Yeah, I mean, that's
content?
So like, this is all going to be,
still have to be
litigated.
With.
So,
yeah.
And that's going to give to those lawmakers, you know, that's the oldest excuse in the book. Let's not do anything now because we need to wait and see what the courts say. But now, since we're in this new paradigm, if in fact it is that the cause is what gets people stirred up and gins up the fandom of a given candidate, well, then there's no loss.
In terms of, and I feel like we always want to talk about anything any of these Republican gubernatorial candidates do from the perspective of what's going to make them stand out, because that's really the goal here, is what's going to make me be just far enough ahead of the other 4 major candidates. Is this something that makes Brad Chambers stand out because it will be so widely supported?
Yeah, I mean, I think no one's going to argue against this. Everyone's going to, of course, we want kids to be online, you know, safely. So, I mean, it's not going to set anything on fire. Like, you know, it was an initial policy attempt. It was safe. It was, you know, a little lacking details, but not too badly.
No.
And so,
Comparatively, we've seen other things that lack more details.
So it's a good start, but I'm hoping there might be, you know, some more meat as he gets going. And it also gives him another reason to put money out there in an ad with his face.
Right.
And he's got to use that to build his name idea, which is the whole game for him, right?
Which
now.
Is thought leader now.
Which is a lot of the same candidates have been
well, I mean, particularly before Brad Chambers.
Well, and
so
particularly
I don't know
Eric Doden.
This issue, though.
Like particularly Eric Doden. Like this is very much the playbook that Eric Doden has been running for a while, which is policy.
Right.
And then I'm going to put ads out there that one help you get to know me, but also highlights the policy that I've been talking about already. So we'll see if it works for Brad Chambers. A legislative study committee recommendation adopted this week would see a blend of cost of living adjustments, or COLAs, and extra monthly payments to increase pension benefits for public retirees. But any change is expected in 2025, with short-term help for retired public servants unlikely. The recommended plan would give older public retirees a 13th check each year, one extra month of benefits. Newer retirees would get a COLA going forward. Where the dividing line will be, whether a past date, the present, or sometime in the future, is a key issue left to be decided. Representative Jeff Thompson says any long-term change will wait for 2025 when lawmakers write a new state budget. But the current budget didn't include either a COLA or 13th check, and Thompson was asked whether retirees can expect help in 2024.
We'll discuss that. I'm not sure on that part, but there'll be some discussion there, I'm sure.
Senator Brian Buchanan, who chaired the study committee examining the issue, said lawmakers typically don't reopen the state budget in a non-budget session. John Shaughness, we talked about this before, but now we have finally a recommendation for a long-term solution. But would you be surprised if lawmakers do nothing in 2024 on this issue?
Does nothing include talk? Because there
yes.
will be talk.
Just talk
there will
does
be talk.
Not count on
because
this issue.
This is sort of parallels what we just talked about in a way. Nobody's going to come out against helping the seniors and retirees who served the state well during their tenure as an employee. And they're a much more sympathetic audience than the pedophiles we alluded to before. So they have that going for them. So there will be people. No one's going to say we shouldn't do this, but there will be probably convenient ways to push it back. Let's see how revenues look. Let's take a look at this, that, or the other. And we all know that lawmakers don't want to do anything of this sort, even as palatable as this, in a non-budget year. So there will be those purists who say we got to wait for a budget year. But back to the talk question, there will be those. There would be proposals to address this in the short term, no doubt about that.
The long-term solution waiting until 2025 makes a ton of sense. New budget, we have to do something brand new. It makes total sense. But there is money already
there to do
something in the short term.
That's the reason I think this is obviously every short session they're like, no money, no budget items. But in this case, one thing that helps the cause is that there is a special supplemental fund that is built up with money just for this reason.
Yeah.
And it's sitting there, and they could pay it without affecting any reserves, any structural balances, nothing. So that will be the one thing that will make it hard for them to say no.
And that when in the 2023 budget, for the first time in decades,
they didn't do the 13th
no
check.
COLA or 13th check. We've always done at least one or the other.
Right.
That was not in an election year for state lawmakers.
It is now.
If they don't do it in 2024, will be.
Pressure? I'm glad they're discussing it because we've underpaid our pensioners for years and years and years, and they need to do something in 2024. As if nothing more than a gesture of good faith for the 13th check. Or maybe even a little bit more than the 13th check, maybe the 13th and 14th check, to make up for this. But then they have to look at this long term, and we have to correct this problem because we are underpaying our pensioners, and that's really, in a state with the budget surplus the way we have it, is inexcusable.
I've asked this question before. I was stunned when they didn't include a COLA or a 13th check.
Make that too.
And then they said, oh, we're going to study it, we're going to have these. But then throughout this study committee, a lot of really good work went into this study committee. We've talked on the show just recently about how maybe not so much great work has been going on anymore. This was a really good committee. And they have a recommendation. But why is it not a no-brainer to go, long-term solution can wait, we know we've got to do something in the short term?
Yeah, To that point, I think a lot of people agree with you that this does seem like a no-brainer. So to Nikki's point, I do think there is a tangible chance. Again, it's probably more likely there's talk, but I think there is a tangible chance. You already heard Representative Bob Cherry, who's one of the top members of the Ways and Means Committee, coming out being like, there is going to be a bill. Yeah. And just the way he's championed that in the past, the influence he has in that caucus, I think there's a solid chance that that bill gets a hearing and we'll see where it goes, you know, where amendments and things like that. But to your point, I think that's what you want to see out of a study committee is, you know, you see a lot of recommendations come out, be like, you know, status quo, or we should study it again. But this one actually had a really good, tangible, long-term solution, I think.
All right. Indiana will be eligible for tens of millions of dollars in federal funding to help advance biotechnology development. And that's because the state this week was named one of 31 regional tech hubs across the country under the federal CHIPS and Science Act.
U.S. Senator Todd Young, who helped create the CHIPS Act, calls Monday's announcement a major win for Hoosiers. The Tech Hub designation was awarded to Heartland Bioworks, an Indiana group led by the Applied Research Institute. Its partners include industry leaders such as Eli Lilly, Cook Medical, and Roche, higher education institutions such as Purdue, Notre Dame, Ivy Tech Community College, and Indiana University, economic development organizations, labor unions, and the cities of Fishers and Indianapolis. The designation now makes Indiana eligible to compete for up to $75 million in grants later this year to help further develop medical and biotechnology.
Nikki Kelly, how big a win is this for Indiana?
I mean, I think it's a pretty big deal. Obviously, that bill is making some waves. I was surprised it was, this is going to sound horrible, only $75 million. I know that sounds horrible, but it does seem to make a big impact in a biotech world. It would maybe be a little more than that, but we'll see what they get. I do find it interesting that, you know, all the hub and support for this, but we got to remember that most of the Republicans in the state and Congress voted against that bill, including Mike Braun, Victoria Spartz, and others. So, you know, I think maybe it'll be interesting to see if they embrace it now, even though they voted against it.
You think they'll be at the press conference if we do get the money?
Well, no, one notable Republican, the most notable Republican who did not only vote for this in Congress, but helped write it in Congress, is Todd Young.
He and Chuck Schumer, I think,
worked on it together. How big a win is this for Todd Young?
In the real world, not the bizarre world, it's a huge win. It's a huge win for him. It's a huge win for Indiana. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Somebody will try to spin it negatively. Again, we've seen this kind of upside-down approach to jobs. When are jobs bad? Well, when they seem to be high-paying and they're based on education requirements and technology, that's somehow un-American.
No,
but
when are jobs bad? If you're a Republican, when they're created by a Democrat.
Well,
and if you're a Democrat, when they're created by a Republican.
This is good, and it's not only good because of, you know, you get these direct investments, but this is sort of like the early foreign automotive investments where an initial plant would give rise to an entire cottage industry of secondary suppliers, and then those suppliers were supplying the secondary suppliers. It's all good. Chalk one up for Indiana, chalk one up for Senator Young.
And it shows when you have a moderate senator like Senator Young who's willing to work with the Biden administration, with the Biden administration, you could actually accomplish something for the state of Indiana, unlike Senator Braun.
Well, I want to ask this question, which is Todd Young kind of stuck his neck out on this one, which is he worked with the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, who is, you know, a boogeyman for so many Republicans across the country, stuck his neck out, worked with the Biden administration and said, no, we need to do this. Does this now, you know, with the tech hub being named here and potentially money coming here, does this sort of pay it all off for Todd Young? Like, the gamble was worth it?
I think so, just for even future endeavors. Now, however, in his own party, working with the other side doesn't seem to be very popular right now. So any future endeavors, I think if he kind of stays the line and actually points again to the tangible things that he's done, I think that'll support him in the future for sure.
There's got to be continued funding, not just this, but it's historically challenging for the National Science Foundation, which was created in, 1950? Just because it's powerful on paper. There have been times in our history where, either because of lean times federally or philosophical changes, that it just doesn't get funded.
But this is different because it's technology and it's manufacturing and it's tangible products. It's not research which may benefit the next generation. It's something they'll be able to put their hands on.
More immediately.
Absolutely.
All right, finally, a twist on a spooky season standard. A car wash in Fishers, Indiana has created what they're calling the Tunnel of Terror, a kind of haunted house, but in a car wash. They're doing it for the last 3 hours of their service on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays in mid to late October heading into Halloween. Chris Mitchum, Do you like this as an alternative to the haunted house?
As somebody who does not like haunted houses, this sounds even worse, because in haunted houses, you can walk in and, you know, kind of go at your own pace and let people go in front of you. In a car wash, you are latched on for a minute and a half of terror. Just no thank you.
Are they still washing the cars?
I don't think they're still washing the cars.
Are they still washing the cars while they have Frankenstein? So then you're not steering. Just close your eyes.
Exactly. Exactly.
You really want to steer.
Well, maybe go get your car washed when it's not the Tunnel of Terror.
Well, there's that.
A real terrifying, I wouldn't do this to kids or anybody in, you know, who might be impressionable, but sitting in the gallery of the U.S. House for an extended period of time, that could be traumatic.
You know that go alert after you get whenever you're supposed to go? That better have a loud siren, because my eyes will be closed.
All right. Yeah. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Chris Mitchum, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/IWIR or on the PBS app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.